freedom is the right to tell what they do not want to hear. CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. Tired of the same repetitive government narratives? And wave goodbye to the distractions and rhetoric of corporate media. For this is Anti-Media Radio.
But I want to get the language right.
The government is in trouble.
You're all a bunch of slaves. A bunch of slaves.
What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another.
What's your definition of me?
And now, here's your host, S.M. Gibson.
Someone else's propaganda. I'm for truth, no matter who tells it. I'm for justice, no matter who's for or against it. I'm a human being first and foremost, and as such, I am for whoever and whatever benefits humanity as a whole. March the 19th, 2015, this is Anti-Media Radio, and I am your host, S.M. Gibson. Today would have been Malcolm X's 90th birthday, and we led the show off with a quote by the man born as Malcolm Little. It's very true. Someone else's propaganda. I've had enough of it. I am for truth. I'm sick of it. We could get into a whole bunch of things, but I'm going to go ahead and start out still here in San Diego, California, with the editor-in-chief of Anti-Media, Mr. Nick Burnaby. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty well. Glad you're still here in San Diego, hanging out with me at the office, and Jaime and everyone else that works here. And I'm glad we're able to do this show in studio. It's a lot better. We are doing your show on Tuesdays and Thursdays every now and then from over the phone or on Skype. But it's a little different being...
Yeah, the 3,000-mile barrier as opposed to about the 3-foot barrier.
Yeah, I mean, thankfully for modern technology, we can actually do this type of thing, even though we are on the opposite ends of the country most of the time. But it's always nice to actually have guests in the studio. It's a whole different experience. And now that we're adding the video side into this platform, that's going to have a little different perspective, I guess you could say, to this show, and hopefully it makes it a little more interactive. Still just getting started with this video platform, so it's a work in progress. Forgive us for any technical issues or anything, but we're trying to improve this and be more effective and more entertaining at the same time when it comes to delivering this message, which is...
Yeah, see, we're on to be entertaining. We're on camera. I can start turning tables over and throwing stuff. That'd be great.
You already do it on camera.
Might as well.
There's all kinds of crazy stories going on, as usual. A lot of news out. As you were reading earlier, it's Malcolm X Day. And it's important to look back at what's been done in the past, learn from it.
Well, absolutely. I think Malcolm X is a perfect example of somebody that can transition their belief system. Malcolm X was somebody that, at one point in his career, and to be quite honest with you, I say no fault of his own, is that, he was a very prejudiced, some may call it racist, and he was not ashamed of it. And, when you're oppressed by what you feel is an entire community your whole life, and somebody resents that community, I can't personally blame them. But then he went to Mecca, and then he also had the situation with Elijah Muhammad, and Elijah Muhammad, he found out, had, you know, quite a few children out of wedlock. And he later came out with this statement in 1965, which was the year that he was assassinated by the Nation of Islam, and that is according to even Louis Farrakhan. He says that and admits it. But the quote is, "I am not a racist. In the past, I permitted myself to be used to make sweeping indictments of all white people, the entire white race, and these generalizations have caused injuries to some whites who perhaps did not deserve to be hurt. Because of the spiritual enlightenment which I was blessed to receive as a result of my recent pilgrimage to the holy city of Mecca, I no longer subscribe to sweeping indictments of any one race. I am now striving to live the life of a true Muslim. I must repeat that I am not a racist, nor do I subscribe to the tenets of racism. I can state in all sincerity that I wish nothing but freedom, justice, and equality, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for all people." Exactly. Nobody's perfect.
It's really big to note that he learned, you know, from his mistakes and making those sweeping judgment calls on people. You know, that's what leads to things like racism in the first place, is making sweeping judgments and just indicting a lot of one whole group of people over, you know, actions of a few people.
Exactly. And, you know, I think, unfortunately, we still live in a society that does that. And we have people that praise the words of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King and John F. Kennedy, and the list goes on and on and on. But we still have people that make these sweeping indictments about these generalizations of people. You know, it's 2015, and I don't understand why we can't all realize that we are all one people. And we can all come together and work together for the greater good. So it's up to us to make internal decisions. You know, I don't want to get too far on this, but I want to talk about the word integrity for a second. I think integrity is when you see something that has been done wrong, and despite the consequences of speaking out against it, I think that it is your right to come out and speak out against that injustice. That doesn't mean you have to go gossip mongering and, you know, try to make a big scene and try to, you know, make a big show out of things. But at the same time, you know, politely, kindly, quietly make your stance and move on. And we're getting into, you know, the cop block post a little bit that we've got up there. And I'm not going to go into the details of that because that's nobody's business other than the people involved. If anybody wants to find out, it's very easy to find on Google. But, you know, that's really none of my business. That's none of your business, Nick. You know, we said what we had to say about it.
Unfortunate things happen. And people make mistakes.
Exactly. It is.
We've had to unfortunately distance ourselves from something that helps, you know, the millionaire that create, build, to say the least. So I mean, it's not a good situation no matter which way.
It's not.
It's pretty much bad for everyone that's involved, the victims, the perpetrators, the people that are indirectly affected, like us, and the amount of disrespect.
Well, a lot of it's become high school circus, and you know, that's human nature. You have to deal with that in so many different aspects of any situation, really. You know, there's always people that want to stir up drama for whatever reason.
Yeah,
And, you know, that's their prerogative to do so. But, you know, what does that ultimately benefit anyone, you know, other than, you know, making somebody feel smart for a second that they typed out their point or yelled their point or whatever?
Exactly. It's not as utopian as it sounds.
It's meanwhile, we'll cut back to me overthrowing tables in a second for no reason, because that's not hypocritical at all. If anybody wants to call into the show tonight, please feel free. The telephone number is area code 718-717-8296. That's area code 718-717-8296. A little bit later, we usually start the very top of the show off with this, but I want to go ahead and throw the statistics out for the radio show that we do every Tuesday and Thursday here on Anti-Media Radio. And this is just something that we do to keep people informed of the facts of what's really going on. Mainstream media doesn't want to report these facts for whatever reason, and our job here is to enlighten and inform and keep people with genuine statistics that they can use, you know, in their everyday life to form their own opinions about what's really going on in this country. We've had 849 people shot so far in the city of Chicago, and we use the city of Chicago again. Like I tell you every Tuesday and Thursday, it's because they have the strictest gun control laws in the country for any major city, and they've had 849 people shot, 143 homicides so far just this year, and we're in May. We have also had 46 police officers die in the line of duty, and that is versus 432 Americans that have been killed by police since January the 1st. So that's 46 to 432. And that 46, if this is one of your first times listening to us, that number does come with an asterisk next to it, because those 46 officers that have died in the line of duty, they were not all shot and killed. Some were by car wrecks, 10, 11, I believe, heart attacks. So that number, it kind of spans quite a few areas of officers passing away. And this one, we usually always throw this stat out here as well. Nick, I don't know if you're looking for a job anytime soon, but they are hiring for, if you want to behead people in Saudi Arabia. They're hiring for that right now in Saudi Arabia. They absolutely are, and this is sadly not a joke or me exaggerating. They're actually looking for executioners in Saudi Arabia because they've beheaded so many people this year. Last year it was 87 for the entire year. This year we're at 85, and it's May. So we're two away from breaking last year's record, and they're executing so many people that they are looking to hire executioners. They're running out of people to chop people's heads off.
I mean, it would seem unbelievable, but knowing what I know about Saudi Arabia and what they do and how they treat their people, I mean, it's not surprising. What is surprising is that the American people are still fooled by this sham of our foreign policy, where we continue to claim that we're combating radicalism and that kind of thing, when we support a dictatorship in Saudi Arabia that is arguably one of the most radical in the world when it comes to religious extremism.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the biggest problem, I think, is us dealing with the fact that they're supposedly our allies, which is just, it's insane to me. I talk about it every week. I know I sound like a broken record to everybody that I just harp and harp and harp on Saudi Arabia, but where's the accountability going to, where is that going to happen at? And what's so ludicrous to me as well is you get somebody like Sean Hannity on Fox News that sits here and talks about Hillary Clinton taking money into the Clinton Foundation from Saudi Arabia, which, by the way, should completely exclude her from becoming president of the United States, among a billion other reasons. But Sean Hannity has been one of the biggest cheerleaders and advocates for Saudi Arabia throughout the years, because when the Bushes were sitting there holding hands and walking through the grounds of Crawford, Texas, well, that's okay. They're good guys. They've got old. They're good guys. They're against Iraq. They weren't behind 9/11. Forget 15 and 19 hijackers from Saudi Arabia. forget that we pretty much know that they funded it at this point. There's 28 pages inside of Congress that they won't let us see because of it. But again, I know I sound like a broken record, and we can probably get on to more relevant topics. This weekend, May the 23rd, we have the annual March Against Monsanto. Nick is the perfect person to be talking to about this. He is one of the co-founders of March Against Monsanto. And so tell us a little bit about
when it first started. Yeah, that happened a long time ago. But I mean, this movement was born out of frustration, born out of questions. You know, people are wondering, why are so many people sick with diabetes, and why are so many kids having symptoms of ADD, and why are so many kids being born with autism? There's a bunch of questions that people are wondering about, and one of the first logical places to look at why people are getting sick or being born or developing diseases and stuff like that is at the food, because you know that's the main thing that enters into our body, and that's one of the main things that can get us sick. And this whole thing started back during like the time when Obama was getting ready to sign the Monsanto Protection Act, which I think that was back in 2011?
Somewhere
2012.
Around there.
I can't remember when, but
hello.
They were pushing forward this Monsanto Protection Act, which was going to protect these biotech companies from any damages against, you know, any claims that were levied against them for, you know, what their products may be, you know, harming people because of their, you know, the health effects or whatever. And against the wishes of a lot of people, Obama still signed that into law. And basically the next day,
here's something people need to realize real quick, too, just to throw this in there, is when he was running in 2007, he specifically said that he was going to give people the right to label their food, and actually spoke out against Monsanto at the time. And then, like, he's done pretty much everything. He got in office and did the complete opposite. But that was a little backstory. Continue.
Exactly. And
hey, you guys got a big audio problem.
Sorry, what's going on?
There's a big audio problem. You're not coming through on UTY. We can't hear Nick.
Oh, it's weird. All right, we'll figure it out right now.
All right, gentlemen, thank you.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
We're
both using the same mic, so it seems like, I don't know, maybe I'm just too far away from the mic or something. But yeah, this whole thing with March Against Monsanto was kind of born out of that Monsanto Protection Act and the previous frustration that people had already had with what was going on. So, I mean, ever since then, it kind of built into this big movement where people go out into the streets and they protest to march, you know, they march against Monsanto. And there's plenty of things to look at with Monsanto as far as, you know, why people are angry with
them. And see, I think that's important because, you know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I'm, you know, a biologist and I'm a scientist and I'm, you know, I know what I've learned from the internet. You know, that does not make me a scientific expert about these foods. It makes me question things. But what I do know about Monsanto is the way that they've taken advantage of farmers. What I do know about Monsanto is the way that they have basically wormed their way inside of the government to establish their own rules for what they do. And, you know, they're not held accountable because they've weaseled their way into the political system through lobbyists or getting people elected or getting people appointed to different positions. One in particular was the current, one of the heads up at the FDA was the head lobbyist for Monsanto. You know, to me, that's a lot of red flags. And my biggest grievance with them, just, you know, taking the fact that I don't think that I am, you know, the scientific expert in the world, there's so many grievances with how they handle themselves and what they're doing and how corrupt they come across, just the way that they sue farmers. And so many people say that you know, that's a myth, that they don't do that. What's completely ironic about this is Monsanto discusses it on their own website about how they sue these farmers and why they sue these farmers. They completely acknowledge it because they have to. They go to court over it all the time. And yet there's still people out there that don't believe that they're doing that. And to me, I think it's a complete sin for something that Monsanto does 100% do, and that is they patent nature. They're trying to put a patent on nature. They change a gene here or a gene there, and they say, well, we own this now. They're trying to own nature. And I think that's absolutely just despicable.
Yeah, and you know, the GMO stuff, it's like the main point of contention, because there are people that, you know, don't think GMOs are a bad thing. I'm actually one of those people. I'm not completely against GMOs. I think the science can be used to, you know, help the world in some ways. But what I am really concerned with is glyphosate. I'm concerned with Roundup.
Oh, yeah.
I'm concerned with Roundup-resistant genetically modified crops that increase the use of these very dangerous pesticides. The World Health Organization just put a report out last month, not too long ago, about how, you know, glyphosate is most likely carcinogenic for humans, and there are studies that prove that it is carcinogenic for animals. When they've studied them on small mammals like rats and other you know, small mammals, they've shown that it's, you know, it causes cancer. So basically, what we got to keep doing is pushing back against this company, and that's why the march against Monsanto is so important. Because, you know, if we don't hold them accountable, if we don't, you know, create some kind of resistance to what they're doing, they're going to just keep getting away with poisoning people. And it goes back to the Vietnam War. They sprayed Agent Orange. That's another conspiracy theory that came true, man. This is real stuff that happened, and a bunch of people got sick. There's still people being born, not only in Vietnam with birth defects, but people in the U.S. Yep. Americans that fought in the war that were exposed to that stuff while they were out in the jungles. It was being sprayed, and it got on them. It affected their DNA. When they reproduced and had kids, it caused their kids to have all these problems genetically. And, you know, this is just a deadly cycle. And to bring it home a little bit, here in San Diego, the city of San Diego is actually suing Monsanto because they poisoned the bay with PCBs, which is, it's this really hardy chemical that's like, it breaks down even slower than plastic.
Oh, and they wouldn't do that.
For real.
That's conspiracy. That's not happening.
Yeah, they would never. No one would ever do that to us. But I mean, this company's got a really long track record. They were the same people behind DDT, which decimated a lot of the bird life and stuff like that decades ago. And I mean, how many times are they going to get away with this?
People think, oh wow, they're doing this. You know, they're just trying to save the world. They're just amazing people that are trying to save the world. They're a company trying to make money. Okay, they're no different than Halliburton, and they're no different than Philip Morris. They're a company, and they don't care really the repercussions as long as they make money. Period. And when they have contracts with the U.S. government for things like Agent Orange, well, that's big money. And they're not really concerned about the health and well-being of others. So, business practice alone, you know, forget the whole GMO thing. Business practice alone, this is just a despicable company.
Forget the GMOs, forget the pesticides, forget Agent Orange and all the stuff they've done. Just looking at the way that they conduct their business, which is among some of the worst that you could, some of the worst examples you'd ever see in America of corruption. And regulatory capture is a term that they like to use for it. It's where they get their own people into these regulatory agencies, into Congress. You know, Hillary Clinton is a stooge for Monsanto and you know, these big biotech firms. And she stated her allegiance here in San Diego when she spoke at a conference.
In fairness to Hillary, she is a stooge for everybody. So we shouldn't just pin that one thing on her. She's clearly a stooge for
any and all things from the banks to the military-industrial complex. You know what I'm saying? So she's well-rounded. She's probably the most well-rounded candidate when it comes to selling out.
Yeah. I mean, I don't doubt that at all. And now they got these new crops coming out, and they're mostly being developed by Dow, but it uses a combination of Roundup and an ingredient that is almost identical to Agent Orange. So it's two different types of herbicides being used at one time.
That sounds tasty.
And yeah, man, and they're actually already using this stuff. It was approved last year. And some of these crops are being grown like right by schools too. So to think about that, I mean, to think that they're spraying these pesticides and these herbicides right by the schools, I mean, that's just insane. I mean, they're jeopardizing the whole next generation. It's like all these kids that are, you keep in mind that they started using GMOs in the early 90s. And so all these kids that were, you know, anyone born in the 80s, you know, they grew up on this stuff, and it's all been just this big experiment.
Aren't people healthier today, though? Or is it the opposite, actually? Are people less healthy than they've been in years and years and years? But we have all this great technology.
It depends on how you look at it, because the life expectancy has gone up.
Right, but we also are dealing with one of the biggest epidemics in this country, and it's never even addressed. And we talk more about, you know, well, this cop got killed. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of people that die every year from heart disease. Where is that coming from? Why is that happening? You know, there is, these numbers are increasing for a reason. People, the cancer rates are increasing for a reason. Where is it coming from? I don't know. I wish, you know, I did. I can suspect certain things, but I can't sit here and say, well, I know for a fact where this is coming from. But we know that what we eat and what we're subjected to on a daily basis is not healthy, from aspartame to whatever.
Trip on this. The entire American public, since GMOs were introduced in the early 90s, have gotten 10% fatter. And people are, well, where's the, how do you correlate that? Well, that's pretty simple. High fructose corn syrup. That's basically what's replaced all regular sugar, like cane sugar. Like now you see the sodas in the store and it's like, oh, special, it's like a special batch with real sugar in it and stuff. And it tastes like 10 times better. But they replaced all the sugar with this high fructose corn syrup, which is derived, 95% of it is derived from this GMO corn. And it's heavily, heavily subsidized. And they're starting to, they've put this high fructose corn syrup into basically everything. Now, and that's why, in my opinion, that's one of the main reasons why we're seeing so much diabetes, why we're seeing so much obesity, and, you know, why we're seeing a lot of these related health issues, heart disease and things like that, heart attacks and all that. It's related to this high fructose corn syrup, which is related to the GMO corn, which all goes back to the whole fact that this stuff is massively subsidized by the government.
Manufactured sugar in general is not healthy for people. You know, of course, there's certain natural sugars that are going to be present in really anything you eat, but so much of the stuff that we eat is not this natural ingredient that, you know, just comes with what you're eating. It's something that's been added to what you're eating for the taste of it, because so many of these foods, the way, you know, when they come down on calories or fat or whatever, this or that, it dissipates the taste of that food, so they add more sugar to get you to eat it. And sugar in those amounts is very, 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 very unhealthy for people. Look at Cokes, you know, Coca-Cola, Red Bull, anything like that with that high amount of sugar. That's bad for everybody, you know, and there's people that give it to their kids. But do you really think if I want the best for my child and my child to be healthy, you're going to pump them full of Dr. Pepper every day?
Yeah, man, exactly. And so, I mean, this high fructose stuff is bad. And then also you got the aspartame stuff, as you mentioned before. And that's another product that is related to Monsanto. Monsanto bought the company that was making the aspartame. And I forget who it was tied to. I don't know. I can't remember if it was Donald Rumsfeld or Dick Cheney, one of the two, are tied into this as well. But the big problem with aspartame, and you'll notice that a bunch of companies are pulling aspartame out of their products, and it's kind of like this new trend that's going around where a lot of these companies are supposedly trying to go healthier and use more natural ingredients and stuff. But the huge problem with aspartame, not only is it like, you know, various people, you know, various scientific evidence kind of supports that it can be, you know, toxic at certain levels, but also it doesn't, your body doesn't break it down correctly, and your body doesn't recognize it as a sweet, because it is really, really sweet, but your body doesn't recognize it as a sugar. So what happens is your body still craves more and more. And so people were using diet products, aspartame products, to try to go on diet, try to, you know, beat diabetes, prevent diabetes. But recent studies have shown that that's the opposite that actually happens. That the more aspartame you use, the higher chances you have of getting diabetes, because your body is still craving that sugar, and then you still end up eating the sugar and drinking the diet product. So it's really a losing cycle, and that's just another arm of this octopus, which has become Monsanto.
Exactly. So for everybody, cities all around the world are hosting the march. March 23rd is this Saturday. Get out on the streets, and you know there's so many different corporations to protest. So you know this isn't the only bad one. This is a one bad.
That's a big one, man. The food supply is an important. It's an important thing to fight for, because the food supply is, you know, really like the second most important thing out there outside of the water supply,
right?
That ensures the survival of people. And if we allow our food supply to become completely tainted to the point where it's irreversible, man, we're going to be in for some, you know, tough times in the future.
Exactly. Well, speaking of the water supply, that's something that I learned about since I've been here with you in Southern California, is you know, with the drought that y'all have, that we don't really deal with so much back east, you have Nestle and Walmart that basically has this monopoly on the water, and they continue to bottle just tons and tons and tons of water purely for profits and for no other reason. While, you know, there's people, you know, that don't want to shower every day here because it's a waste of water, and you're not allowed to, you know, water your grass and this and that, and there's this huge drought, and yet Nestle and Walmart are just like, hey, whatever, it'll be all right.
Yeah, man, it's just, you know, it comes down to...
And Starbucks, I learned, they stopped bottling water here. You know, they said, okay, when things are better, then we'll do it, but...
Yeah, man, I mean, it comes down to these guys being able to kind of get away with whatever they want. Now they got cops, they got water police here in California now that go around, and if they catch you watering your lawn during the day, I mean, the first ticket's like $500, dude.
Wow.
I mean, it's not cheap. So, you know, they come around, they crack down on the petty offender, and it's very much in the same grain as the drug war. It's like, okay, these petty offenders that are watering their grass or washing their car, you know, we'll slap them with a $500 ticket. Meanwhile, you know, Nestle gets to bottle millions and millions of gallons of this out of this water table, which is ancient water table we got here in California. The place is Southern California is a desert, man. All that water takes years and years and years to kind of resupply itself. And as they bottle this stuff through the drought, they're affecting the whole water table. There's towns in central California in the valley which supplies a huge percentage of the country's food, and that's why this is a big topic for everybody. It's not just a California problem; it affects everyone. There's towns that live right in the next town over from where my step grandparents live up in the Central Valley, where they've already run dry, and so they're the only way they get water now is it has to get trucked in. They're on these massive rationing. There's reports of people literally like having to go to the gas station to try to use the bathroom to get water and stuff. I mean, it's crazy out there, dude. And at the same time, like we've been talking about, they're sucking it dry. It's not just Nestle, but the factory farming industry is sucking the state dry too, and it's just depleting the entire water table, which affects the whole state. And if the Central Valley runs completely dry, if this drought persists, I mean, hopefully it doesn't, but if it does, the entire country is going to get hit with higher food prices. I don't know the exact stats, but I know that a huge percentage of the country's food come from California. I know it's over 30%. It might maybe over 40%. Some crops only come from California. I mean, the almonds and stuff like that. It's like almost all of that stuff is coming from California. So, you know, it's going to affect a lot of people's lives, whether it comes from them losing their food, facing higher prices, running out of certain types of food. I mean, it's going to affect everybody. And so we've all got to be conscious of how and what is being done with in California with the water and, you know, the whole state of affairs when it comes to this. Do as I say, not as I do, which is what the California government is doing. That's what every government does. They give some people, you know, complete access to unlimited resources, and everyone else has to fight for the scraps that are left over.
Right.
And it's pretty sad. The agriculture industry uses over 80% in California of the water. So,
wow.
I mean, that just kind of goes to show.
Mind-blowing. Well, I tell you what, let's go to telephone lines here. Area code 937, you're on Anti-Media Radio. I'm your host, S.M. Gibson. What's your name and how you doing tonight?
Hey, how's it going? My name's Blaze, man. I was just sitting here kind of intrigued about our conversation about the water shortage in California. You know, to me, when he's talking about a situation like that, it's more about the money and more about the corporation. People got to realize that America is a country that's built on the corporation. So, of course, they're not going to fine Nestle for bottling up the water and this and the third, because Nestle's one of the biggest companies in America. And if they stop that, then they stop part of America's revenue. They can't stop that, so they'd rather let people starve before they do certain things like that. You know, and that's one thing that baffles me about our government nowadays, to be honest.
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of really the problem that we're seeing in every industry today, whether, you know, we're talking about Monsanto or Nestle or Walmart or, you know, from Halliburton and the Iraq War. Everything is purely for profit, and humanity has been taken completely out of these corporations. You know, there are a handful. You know, that's not to indict every single corporation. You know, with anything, there's good and bad, but we've seen majority bad lately in the past 2 years, and just how much, you know, can we take advantage of people and continue to charge them for things, especially in the case of Nestle. You shouldn't be charging people for water, and they're, you know, gathering up all the resources to turn around and make a profit off of it, when this is a resource that every human being on the planet needs.
Nestle's been going around squatting on top of water tables all over the world, dude. They're taking over entire, you know, water tables in countries down in Latin America, Central America, and they're just, you know, saying, all right, well, they're kicking out all these indigenous people.
And they say that they're providing water to people, but in reality, what they're doing is making a lot of money.
They're not giving people water. What they're doing is they're stealing the water from people and selling it back to them.
Exactly.
The interesting thing to me is I loved how y'all kind of compared it to the drug war, because it's the same thing coming in, because the government brings in the drugs and then they find the little petty, you know, nickel and dimers there, you know what I'm saying, in neighborhoods and doing this, that, and the third. But it's the same exact thing with the water, you know what I'm saying? They take the water from you and then they fine you for using water that you pay for, you know what I'm saying? It's only a way to make more and more money. And the only way, honestly, that we can stop it is if we try to, as American citizens, try to find a way to help our government to see that it's actually hurting its people. And I don't feel like our government, being as a corporate status as it is, really cares about the little guys.
No, I think you're 100% right. I think you make an excellent point, is that everybody's trying to, no pun intended, dip into the reservoir here and get a piece of what's going on. I mean, you've got the government turning around and saying, we're going to fine you for using water. Well, at the same time, Nestle's taking the water and turning around and selling it to you. So you're getting hit twice and everybody's making a little bit of it. Same as the drug war. You know, they can pick you up for this and make some money, or they can put you in jail and the private prisons make money. Or, you know, how these drugs are getting here, who's selling?
You know, and some detractors will try to make the argument that, oh, well, it's a private property rights issue, and Nestle paid for those property rights, so they should be allowed to suck the water dry. Here's the problem with that logic, man. That water table doesn't just affect that little bit of land that Nestle is inhabiting over there, and it's on one of the Native American reservations.
Right.
And it's not just affecting that little part of the land that they're on, man. They're sucking the entire water table dry. Everybody that lives around there I can't say how big it is, but it's probably hundreds of square miles. Everybody that lives around that area is being affected by these guys sucking the water out of the water table.
And here's one reason that it's actually way worse than the drug war is because, you know, people get addicted to drugs and, you know, they crave them or whatever. But we're talking about something that every human being on this planet needs to survive. And they're trying to maintain some sort of monopoly on life because you need water to live. And they're saying, if you want to live, you have to go through us. That is beyond horrible. Right. That is beyond criminal. You need water to live, and you need us to live. So give us your money. Wow.
Exactly. Exactly.
Hey, the rich get richer, and the poor suffer to see it happen.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, and that's kind of what we're living. That's kind of the times that we're living in right now, and I think that we're seeing. We're seeing so many frustrations, and I think that they're kind of spilling over into everything. You know, we've had over 1 million people with March Against Monsanto last year. We've got people on the streets over police brutality and so many different things. And I don't necessarily think that, like in the case of the police brutality protest, I don't think it's this one situation that people are going out there for. I think people are fed up with everything.
It's just, yeah, it's compounding.
Right. People are so sick of all of it, and they need an outlet to express their frustrations. And whether they go out and march against Monsanto or they go out and march for Tamir Rice, people are ready to get on the streets and say, I've had enough of this. Something has to change. I'm sick of being lied to, sick of being taken advantage of, and it's time that we take our country back. And I think that's what Americans are saying right now.
There is definitely a prevailing attitude coming out, I think, that has that, you know, that feels that way, you know, and that's part of this whole project here with the anti-media is trying to scoot these ideas along by helping to counter this corporate media agenda that's coming out. Because, you know, obviously the corporate media, it's controlled by the same exact corporations that we're talking about right now. I mean, they're all intertwined. And so when you got this huge corporate monopolized media, they're going to do everything they can to keep preserving what's going on.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And so that's kind of the role that we're trying to play here. And that goes back to the quote that we posted for the show promo, the Malcolm X quote. Media is incredibly powerful, man. You know, and it's a matter of life and death, you know, life and death to try to counter these narratives that are being brought out there. And we all know Malcolm X was treated how he was treated by the media. You know what I mean? Right. He was treated as a terrorist and things like that. And that's what they're going to do to anybody that starts to make a major impact on the status quo.
Well, exactly. I think the perfect example of that, because, you know, at certain points in Malcolm X's career and to his own acknowledgement of it, you know, there were radical views. Look at somebody like King, who had apparently the most radical views, and they should have been the least radical, because this was a guy saying no violence at all, period. He should have been the least radical person in this country. He became the most radical because he was garnering power through the people. And when the people had that power, that's when the authorities got scared. That's when the powers that be got scared. I know there was a story about X in New York, and there was a court case going on. And I can't remember the specifics of this entire thing, but I know that he came out. And there was a huge crowd at the courthouse, and he just raised his hand. And as soon as he raised his hand, the entire crowd dispersed. And the NYPD at the time said that is too much power for one man to have.
Yes, sir.
And that's what they were fearful of, the people. They weren't scared of Malcolm X as a person. They weren't scared of Martin Luther King as a person. They were scared of the people behind that person. And because that's what they're ultimately always scared of, people. They're scared of collectivized people taking to the streets and taking back what is theirs. There's no
the whole system, legitimately the system is set up. The system is set up to keep the people divided, not united. And the only way that we can overcamp the system is if we organize and unite as a people. And I'm not talking about black or, you know what I'm saying, whites as individual groups. I'm talking about the American people, you know what I'm saying? I'm an individual that I've got at least 4 different racial backgrounds within my makeup, you know what I'm saying? So it's not like I'm speaking for one specific group, you know what I'm saying? It's got to happen, you know, and it's happening all over the world today, you know what I'm saying? As I see on y'all posts all the time, but it's happening all over the world today. Only people that's just blinded enough not to actually stand up against their government is here in America.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems that way. I mean, it seems like there's been so much going on around the world, and as we see the frustrations here in the United States, but, you know, what have we really do to, you know, speak out about this? We're having a national debate right now about whether or not Hillary Clinton or Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio or whoever you want to name is going to be our president. If we're really trying to make a difference, these names shouldn't even kind of be brought up at all whatsoever.
Exactly.
I mean, these names should be something that's coming out of a jury and a judge's mouth sentencing someone to prison, not coming out of the mouth of the American voter.
Yeah, man, I agree. I wrote a big expose on Hillary Clinton recently, and it fortunately it went viral. Normally when you write these kind of exposés about how she's committed war crimes in Libya and stuff like that, normally it kind of falls on deaf ears. But fortunately, I was able to hijack the narrative about her email scandal, which is a total superficial non-starter. I mean,
she would go to jail for that, though, honestly.
If it was a regular person, she would have gone. If a regular person did what she did with the emails, yes, she would have gone to jail for that.
Right.
But if a regular person was responsible for 50,000 deaths in Libya, you wouldn't be going to jail. You'd be getting your head chopped off by some guy in Saudi Arabia.
Remember, there are no regular people that are responsible for 50,000 deaths. The only people that are responsible for 50,000 deaths get a pat on the back and a pension, and they get sent on their way.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, man, exactly, dude. And so, you know, Hillary Clinton is and out of this group of candidates that are coming out, at least in rhetoric, she's a moderate. You know, from the rhetoric looking at this guy, Lindsey Graham is going to be running for president. And this guy wants to basically wipe out half of the earth. Marco Rubio's new campaign, which is the Keeping America Safe campaign called the New American Century. It sounds eerily similar to what Wesley Clark warned us about, which was the old the Project for a New American Century, which was a total neocon plan, which is what's still being played out today, where they were going to try to take down 7 countries following 9/11, and a lot of those countries, including Libya, were on that list, and Hillary Clinton helped do that.
Here's something.
And so Hillary Clinton and Marco Rubio, man, these are basically two of the same exact policies.
Rand Paul came out today and he made a statement and just said, if anybody's interested in going back to Iraq, you all know who to vote for. And he was basically insinuating pretty much everybody running. So, you know, he's gone back and forth and that is what it is. But at least the difference with Rand is, you know, he at least suggests maybe that's not a good idea. Literally everybody else running is just like, this is a wonderful idea and I'm going to run on the platform of going to bomb these people.
Yeah, and the Republican platform, at least to speak for them, it's going to be so far to the neocon right. And Rand Paul, with all of his faults, he's going to be the only guy in there that's actually going to sound like he's making any type of sense.
Right.
But the media is going to turn it into such a feeding frenzy that Marco Rubio, in my opinion, is going to wind up being the guy that sounds like a moderate, that's in the middle, and he's just going to be the most electable guy out there, and that's who's going to be running against Hillary.
We discussed it the other night a little bit, and, you know, what it appears like they're going to do is they're going to have Jeb Bush on the complete far right, and he's just going to be lunatic, I'm a Bush, and we're just going to go bomb everybody.
And then you're going to have Lindsey Graham just to the right of that.
Well, Lindsey Graham, you know, he's to the right of Hillary. But
he really is.
But then you're going to have Rand Paul on the other side. And Rand Paul is going to be saying, I think, a lot more things that Americans are interested in. But I think they're also going to try to pigeonhole him some sort of crazy. Ron Paul is crazy. He's good about this, but this is crazy.
and they're going to try to shove him to the side or whatever. And then you're going to have Marco Rubio right in the middle, the guy that's kind of trying to be saying some of the things Rand Paul says, but kind of says some of the stuff Jeb Bush says, and that's how they could push him through. And that's terrifying.
Yeah, and then on the other side of the spectrum, you got Bernie Sanders, which also is, you know, fairly appealing, and he talks a pretty good game about being anti-corporate and, you know, worrying about the middle class. And out of all the candidates running for the Democrats, he's probably going to be the best one for middle class people and people, working class people and stuff like that. But again, he's going to be pigeonholed. It's going to be said that he's unelectable.
Well, by his own admission, he is a socialist. And for me, even though, you know, I don't completely agree with that point of view, I completely respect him for saying that, because I think, wow, somebody's honest about what they believe in. I have complete and total respect for him, you know, because you get all these other people, I'm just a good old Democrat. It's like, no, you're insane is what you are.
I'm voting for for Snowden.
There we go. That's a good write-in candidate right there.
That is absolutely the person we should all be voting for. But since we live in the USS of A, we have Snowden on the side with our quote-unquote mortal enemies, and we have people lying in front of Congress. They're okay. They get promotions. You know, the people that are spying on us, that's okay. No problem. The guy that comes out, tells the truth, hurts no one, he's considered a traitor and an enemy of the state. That's the world we live in today. The guy that's the hero is the enemy of the state.
Yeah, he really is, man. And you know, the propaganda, once again, it pays off here in the U.S. The majority, according to recent polling, the majority of Americans look at Edward Snowden as a traitor, and only about 35-40%. And now, keep in mind that the numbers are way skewed when it comes to the younger people. Some of the younger people that were included in this poll, almost all of them say they supported Snowden, what Snowden did. All the people that are older, you know, in the 40s and above, the majority of them said, no, Snowden's a traitor, you know, screw that guy.
Right.
He put us in danger. When the fact of the matter is that everything Snowden did was for the benefit of, you know, U.S. citizens.
The peace, exactly.
You would think.
Exactly. He basically gave up his rights to benefit the people, to, you know what I'm saying, to speak out about something that he believed in. That's why I support Edward Snowden, you know what I'm saying, over everything else. He gave up his own rights to where he was born.
Absolutely.
For
forget
everybody.
Jesus. Snowden's the real American hero. But you would think, just based on the rhetoric of some of these people, that you would have the Tea Party people saying, I support Edward Snowden because, you know, that's constitutional and yada, yada, yada. And some of these people, the majority of these people, are completely against him and think that he is a traitor. And that's confusing to me because they, you know, and that just shows how much people don't really believe in what they believe in.
That's media lies right there. Media lies, you know what I'm saying? They persuade the minds of the people and they make them think whatever is portrayed on the news. That's why we see with all of the recent uprisings and America, the way that they portray the citizens to be, you know what I'm saying? Just like you have the president on national television, and they showed this 100 times. I watched it on CNN. That's the only channel I watch, really. And I would actually love to see you guys on CNN for real. You know, but honestly, I watched that, and they showed Barack Obama 100 times that night, just calling the citizens thugs, you know what I'm saying, and this, that, and the third. But it's what they put on TV that persuades the mindset of the people to believe whatever it is that they want them to believe, whether it's right or wrong.
I think you absolutely nailed it, and I'll tell you a night that I was absolutely terrified to be living in this world on. And it was the night of the riots in Ferguson. And it wasn't because of the riots in Ferguson that I was scared. What bothered me is every single channel, period, was covering this one event. That's all anybody in the world was concerned with. Just watch what's happening in Ferguson. To me, that sent something off in my brain and said, if everybody's watching this one event, they could literally just be doing anything anywhere, and no one would be paying any attention to it.
Exactly.
And that is the power of corporate media. They can keep you enthralled with a certain topic,
and say, look at the right hand, look at the right hand, look at the right hand, and the left hand is just stabbing you in the back over and over and over, and you never even see it.
Yeah, man, but we know all about Miley Cyrus and Justin Bieber. Yeah, and, you know, it's constant distraction taking us away from the important stuff. And we got the story here on the anti-media I kind of want to just bring up real quick. It's by Cassius. And it's a relatively straightforward story. A military surveillance drone crashed into a guy's backyard. It was a small drone. It was only 3 foot wingspan. And this happened down in Colorado Springs, Colorado. But, you know, Cash just kind of brought up a good point here. And you know, like I said, it's pretty straightforward. A drone crashed down this guy's lawn. The military came and recovered the drone. The nearest Army base, which is Fort Carson, which were the ones that were flying the drone, issued a statement. And they basically said, yeah, we lost communication with our drone, and it went down, and this, that, and the third. That's basically all they said. But here's the thing. The point that Cassius brings up here is that, like, you know, the fact of the matter is there's military surveillance drones flying, whether they're flying near populated areas, near neighborhoods, or they're actually being flown over them. It's hard to say because, you know, according to the military statement, it was only flying on the base. They lost communication with it, and it just happened to fly into this neighborhood. Now, of course, we're going to question whether or not that's the whole story because more often than not, whenever the military releases a statement like this, they're just trying to cover their ass. They're not actually trying to put out truthful information. They're just trying to, you know, cover their tracks, make sure they don't get in trouble. What's more likely here, man, is that they're at least experimenting with military surveillance drones over top of neighborhoods.
Right.
And, you know, this gets a little darker when you start to see the picture gets a little more, you know, scary. When you start to look at the expectations when it comes to what's going to be going on with these drones in the coming years. But according to the FAA's own reports, they predict that there's going to be 30,000 drones actively being used in America by the year 2020. And a big percentage of that are going to be used by law enforcement, cops, police, border patrol, you know, government, military, and stuff like that. And a lot of experts believe that they're going to be weaponizing these drones. In fact, according to documents dating back...
They'll be weaponizing those drones, and they probably already are, and just not telling anybody.
Well, dating back to 2010, there was actually documents that show that the DHS was already trying to get the drones armed back in 2010. Now, keep in mind that they were thinking about using it for the Border Patrol. So they're thinking of gunning down immigrants that are trying to cross the border.
You've got to remember, too, in 2010, 95% of Americans thought drones were some giant conspiracy theory. They didn't really believe that that technology, you know, existed the way it did. And, you know, going back to mentioning Rand Paul, I tell you what, the one great thing he did do is put drones on the tip of everybody's tongue in this country. Because before that happened, everybody's kind of like, whatever, that's not.
Yeah,
it's like he was exactly kind of the Snowden of that discussion.
We need to have an honest discussion about drones because they've been trying to get them armed since 2010. By 2020, they're probably going to have, you know, drones that are flying around your neighborhood that can deploy tasers or can, you know, even shoot people. I don't know. And if we don't,
I would be shocked if they did that.
And if we don't get a grip on it, you know, we're gonna be running into some really scary situations. Now, the other thing is that from other documents that were released fairly recently, I actually knew this beforehand because I had a friend in the military that told me about this, but, you know, it's been released that some of these drones that they're flying in Afghanistan is where they really had the testing ground, the proving grounds for these drones that were run completely by computers. What they're talking about is not even
through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo.